A Thanksgiving Day Sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan on November 25, 1999, entitled The Freedom and Joy of Generosity. Copyright Grand Valley State University.
Thanksgiving is a day when I think it's very easy for us to enjoy one another and to have a good laugh together. We are truly thankful for all of you. Thankful for some of you who returned for the holidays with us, not having gone through this awful October and November that we had. We welcome home. And to some of you who come home from college, university, welcome home. It's good, always good to see you. Home for the holidays. On Sunday morning, there was a rather full service and then a rather full platter of opportunities following, and so I had to clip the sermon a bit. I do that on occasion, contrary to popular opinion. And the thing that I cut off the 10 o'clock service was any reference to my scripture lessons. I know you all noticed it, but none of you said anything. But I did read from the Psalter Sunday, Psalm 8, Psalm 65, and Psalm 100. And I was trying to connect the idea of awareness or consciousness with gratitude. And I spoke to that, but I never did connect it to those psalms which I read. Psalm 8 is the psalm that begins with praise and ends with praise, and speaks about contemplating the vastness of the cosmos. When I consider the sun, the moon, and the stars that you've made, what is the human being that you're mindful of us? And then, of course, the psalmist comes back to see that in spite of our smallness in the light of the vastness of all that is, we are the ones who are aware. For we have been created in the image of God. We created just a cut below God, he says, or a cut above the angels. There's a moment of awareness that we, in this vast cosmic drama, are those persons who have been blessed with awareness, consciousness, so that we can contemplate the universe and the Creator, and know that we're doing it. The old familiar Psalm 100, which blesses God for God's steadfast love and faithfulness, says in the course of that poem, "For it is God that has made us, and not we ourselves." A moment of awareness, and that awareness leads to gratitude, because when we become aware that we have not made ourselves, that we are not autonomous beings, that we are creatures, that we have been gifted with life, when we become aware of that, when we take a moment to reflect on that, then that issues in gratitude. Then our awareness leads us to praise and thanksgiving. And those psalms point that out beautifully. Today, the scripture lesson from 1 Chronicles 29 is the story of David gathering the gifts in for the building of the temple, which he was not to build, but which his son Solomon would build. And we have this beautiful, eloquent outpouring of praise as David is so moved by the generosity of the people. And then, again, at that moment of awareness, he says, "And who am I? But who am I? And who is my family that we should be so blessed?" That moment of awareness which leads to humility and thanksgiving. And the generosity that is the wellspring of that sense of well-being. David says that the people continued to rejoice and to celebrate that day because with freedom and joy they had given unto the Lord. But who am I that I should be allowed, enabled, blessed with a moment of awareness like this, that I can be aware that I am gifted and that I can jump out of my skin for a moment and contemplate it all and offer my thanksgiving? If I were to string 5 words together to send you out with today, it would be awareness, gratitude, generosity, freedom, and joy. Awareness, who am I? Who am I that I should be thus the object of God's blessing? That awareness, triggering gratitude. That gratitude, triggering generosity. And that act of generosity, causing freedom and joy to well up within me. Well-being. That's a formula for good, healthy living. And I think we need to think about that and value that in our time, because it's not a common commodity. Think about our society today, our life today. We're living in a period of extended prosperity. And you hear about it all the time. You hear about it from the administration that would take credit for it. Or perhaps the Congress that would say, because of. You hear about it in the evening news when the stock market goes up or down. When it's up, you're sure to have someone come on there to tell how it's probably going to go down, because the fact that it's up is going to trigger some other fears that will lead to a downturn. It's the economy, stupid. It is the economy. Karl Marx was really right. Economic determinism. We are bombarded constantly with how things are going in the world, the international scene and the national scene. And it's very easy to get caught up in all of this. I resent watching TV these days, the little bit you have to do to keep up the fact that you're still in this world. But when you have to give a third of every hour that you watch to being bombarded with the commercials that have created us as consuming animals. We are consumers. We are treated like consumers. And we do get driven by it. We do get impacted by it. I can remember myself, my idealism coming into the ministry. The call of a minister 100 years ago. There. This thing really isn't very good. The call of a minister when I came in, no congregation promised a salary. Well, they did. But the heart of the call was to relieve you from all worldly avocations. The concern of the call, what a pastor was promised by a people, was that he could serve them without worrying about having a roof over his head or food on the table or clothing for his children and not much more. To set you free from all worldly avocation, to set you free from all concern about those basic necessities of life. But through the emerging of my own independent status, I got my pension fund released. Now it's invested, and so am I. In my young idealist years, I didn't even know there was an economy. And then one gets to a point where one becomes vested and invested. And pretty soon one is fascinated by it, captivated by it, mesmerized by it. And the better it goes, contrary to what we might think, is not a relaxation and enjoyment, but more tension and anxiety that the upswing will continue. Am I talking to you or not? And the thing that marks much of our life today is a certain drivenness that now and again pushes people over the edge. Did you hear the report earlier this week of the two women in Alabama who got involved in some road rage? I don't know the details of it, but obviously on a freeway, one cut off the other or made some gesture or was riding on the other's bumper. I don't know what it was, but there were two women. One was 36 years old, one was 40 years old. They were both coming home from work, and they were both going to child care centers to pick up their children. Does it sound familiar? And around Birmingham, Alabama, for 5 or 6 miles, they're involved in this tense game on the road until they both pull off at the same exit. One stops, the other stops. One gets out of the car, comes toward the car that stopped behind her, and the woman just happened to have a .38 caliber pistol there. Rolled down her window and shot the woman right in the face and killed her. And we're told that the 36-year-old and the 40-year-old, the one that was murdered and the one who murdered, were both wonderful, middle class, working parents, responsible, upstanding people. And one life is snuffed out and another life is ruined, perhaps even worse. Because in the drivenness of which we have all had some taste and into which we can get wound up so very easily, there comes a moment when we're pushed over the edge. And we have reached for one ring too many, or we've pushed for one goal too far. And suddenly we lose our humanity, and we lose our sanity, and we lose our well-being. And this period of extended prosperity, I find that very, very fascinating. We need a moment of awareness when we can sit back and say, who am I that I am so blessed? And the awareness then leading to gratitude. And the gratitude issuing in generosity, which comes out of a freedom and a joy. In our contemporary society, if I can make one more reference. We've got in our state currently this whole voucher for education matter. We've had a couple of perspectives here. We've had discussion on it, and it's something that needs discussion, and it needs civil and thoughtful discourse. And I'm not going to try to solve the voucher question for you, but I am going to say that what I sense, the thing that worries me, is that the move to vouchers is a move for some kind of equity and fairness for those who choose a private education for their children. And over all these years, public education has been one of the great institutions of this country. And there's always been the opportunity for someone to choose a private school or a charter school or a religious education, but they paid for it in addition to taxes. And there's always been that cry, it's not fair. Of course it's not fair. But one has the freedom to choose that. But I do sense that movement toward vouchers is an attempt to recoup some of that tax money for public education. It will hurt public education. And you say, public education has failed. And I will say, it hasn't failed here, but it has failed in many areas. If you look at the schools that are in trouble in the state of Michigan, almost all of them that are in a failing situation are in the inner city. They are black, they are poverty, marginalized people. And so someone said to me just this week, do I have to penalize my children to put them in that kind of a setting? I want the best for them. I want the best education for them. To put them in that situation is to compromise their possibilities. I understand that. So put your child where you will and pay for it as you can. But this is my question on Thanksgiving Day. What about the poor? I would invite you to read or listen on books on tape. Brilliance Corporation has a book by Jonathan Kozaw about schools. It's 3 or 4 years old now. I listened to that and I got so depressed because I thought to myself, children in that kind of a situation, they don't have a chance. They wouldn't even have a soul. They wouldn't even be human. Someone gave me some videos on Second World War, and Nancy and I are beginning to go through them, and we watched the German machine under Hitler with the propaganda of Goebbels, and we saw how a whole people were mesmerized and they deified this man Hitler, and he led this great German nation into that terrible, terrible experience that we know as the Second World War. How could he do it? Because there was a people whose nose was rubbed in it after the Treaty of Versailles, after the First World War. Think of the contrast between what happened after the First World War in Germany and its consequences, and what happened after the Second World War with the Marshall Plan and the building of the nation. You see, it may not even be necessarily a Christian matter. It's a human matter. If we don't live with compassion, I wish I could get credit for the quote. I don't know who said it. Someone said it. A civilization finally will be judged by what it does for its most vulnerable members. So when we talk about vouchers in education, I don't want to argue with the vested interest of the public school system. I don't want to argue for or against private schools or charter schools. That's not the issue. I want to leave us with a question. Who will take care of those who are hopeless, who are living in poverty, who don't have a chance? I said to a friend this week, you know, it might be more compassionate just to take all of that rubble, all that rabble, and gas them. You shocked by that? Well, I just saw in that rise of Hitler, the burning of books, and the poet Heinrich Heine said, those who burn books will end up burning people, and they did. And what happens to a society? What happens to a society when the poor, the broken, the hopeless, and the helpless are simply shoved aside? You know what we have to do? We'll have to build gated communities for all of us. We'll have to build the walls high. We'll have to have more police. We'll have to have more prisons. We'll have to have greater security. There'll be no safety on the street. We'll have to enjoy all of our luxury from this extended period of prosperity behind walls. And we won't even be able to shout with freedom and joy because the masses may learn. Or it may get so bad that the masses so lose their soul that they get this slave mentality that they can't even rise up and rebel. Oh, at Thanksgiving, dear friends. Thanksgiving is a time for awareness. Dear God, we've been blessed. And awareness should lead us to gratitude. Gratitude to generosity. And that generosity, that brings such freedom and such joy. That's why this is always such a wonderful day. Because, at least for this day, we come to know, we become aware that it is in letting go and the open palm rather than the tightly clenched fist. It is in the offering rather than the grasping that our deepest humanity, our greatest joy, and any real freedom exist. So keep repeating it to yourself. When you're on the expressway and someone cuts you off. When you're contemplating all the catalogs for Christmas. When you're thinking how to nurture your children. Just keep repeating it. Awareness. Gratitude. Generosity. Freedom and joy. That's my Thanksgiving word for you.